What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I am Pete.
And we are sitting in the middle of New York Comic Con right now.
Isn't that very... press section.
Yes, kind of next to the press section is what's going on.
We had to go past some tight security to get in here.
All I'm saying is Pete is super nervous, so if you hear him whispering at any point, that's what's going on.
Well, we're in the press section doing press. I feel like that's weird.
Is this press? Are you interviewing me?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy. What do you want to know?
Well, I saw you geek out over vitamins today. Was that your favorite part of the con?
Oh, gosh. Whenever I come to a con, the number one thing I want to get is vitamins. Number two thing is energy drinks. And then I'm gone.
Yeah.
And then I'm just out the door.
You were walking down the con. You literally were like, ooh, vitamins.
Well, here's the thing. This morning, I took out the garbage, and my kids finished up their vitamins. And I thought in my head, oh, I need to get more vitamins.
And then they
now
appeared.
I'm done.
You robbed that vitamin place.
I did not. I asked them if they had any vitamins for kids, and the guy was like, here is 50 packets of vitamins, so we're good.
Yeah,
we're good to go.
You're set.
I hope I don't check later and find out those vitamins are poison or something like that.
Oh, man. Well, we'll both die. We both took them.
Yeah, I mean, we ate a bunch of kitted gummy vitamins. And that's our con wrap-up. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Pete and I walked around on the floor. We got a couple of interviews that we're going to set up for you guys now and roll them out. First one, we talked to the head of Archie Comics, Alex Segura, about everything that's going on there. This has been a big con for them. They rolled out Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Riverdale Season 3, the panel is hitting tomorrow, our time, depending on when you listen to this. And they have a bunch of comics coming out, so we chatted with him about that. Also, I talked to Dennis Hopeless about his WWE comics.
Yeah, you're a wrestling fan now.
Can you smell what I am cooking?
Yeah, we've been talking about the WWE comics quite a bit on the show, so it was interesting to catch up to him and find out what has been going through his mind when he's been writing them. I thought it was pretty fascinating. And then the pièce de résistance, the crème de la crème, Pete
was reunited with Tim Seeley, and it was magic.
It felt so good.
It felt, I was trying to be cool. But I really wanted to just hug him.
I was standing right next to you. You were not cool.
I just wanted to hug him and be like, oh, man, I love you, bro.
Yeah. So Pete got to talk to Tim Seeley about everything that he has going on, mostly about Hackslash. I loved how you guys will hear, but I loved how you would be like, yeah, we're going to talk about this thing, but let's get back to Hackslash. Like three times in the interview.
Well, it's kind of his main thing. You know, he does a lot of great stuff. But he's known
he's not even writing it right now.
But he's known for Hackslash. I mean, let's face it.
Oh, man. All right. Well, anyway, enjoy, you guys. Three interviews heading up, and we appreciate you listening. Yeah. If we don't come back to you with more of this, you can check out our regular podcast Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. We have The Stack. Tuesday night, we have our live show. Support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. And if you're ever in New York, come to our live show totally free every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Alex from New York Comic Con, and we are here with Alex Segura. How you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for having me. It's like the minutes before the insanity starts on the con floor.
Yeah, exactly. We tried to do it so that, you know, otherwise we're just going to drown you out with the volume.
Yeah, no, it's going to happen pretty soon.
Thanks for chatting. It's always good to chat with you. So there's a lot going on for Archie Comics here at New York Comic Con. Given that you have the TV stuff, right? You have Riverdale going into Season 3. You have Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is officially launching here. Mm-hmm. Does this con feel any different?
It feels much bigger. It feels like much more multimedia, to get really corporate in how we describe things. But, you know, we had a Sabrina teaser yesterday. We've got our Archie publishing stuff today. And then tomorrow we have a Riverdale panel on the TV show. So it feels like we're covering every base in New York, which is really cool. So we're heading in really strong.
What about from the comics perspective? Do you find a lot of fans coming and checking out the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina comic, the Riverdale comics?
Yeah, we've seen a huge uptick on the Sabrina trade just from the awareness. People really excited about the show. They want to get to the source material. And a lot of people just have become more familiar with the characters based on the Riverdale show. So they're coming to pick up the comics, which is great.
Cool. Well, let's talk about what you're launching here. You have two books. There's Blossom 666. What's the idea of that?
So, you know, Cullen Bunn, we've been wanting to work with him for a long time, and he's one of the best horror writers, if not one of the best writers in comics. And so we went back and forth, and internally we'd come up with this idea that one of the Blossom twins was potentially the Antichrist. And once we gave him those two elements, he just went crazy. And,
not both of them, though?
Not, well, maybe. All right. I don't know. Just, okay. You'll have to read. And so once we pitched that to him, he really went above and beyond and even darker than we anticipated. So we're pairing him with Laura Braga, and that's coming out sometime next year.
And you have one other one, which is...
Jughead the Hunger versus Vampironica. Right. And so Vampironica is pretty self-explanatory. It's Veronica's a vampire, and that's been great. Greg Smallwood and Meg Smallwood have helped launch that book. And once those five issues are done, she's going to cross over with Jughead the Hunger, which is Jughead as a werewolf. Instead of eating burgers, he's eating people. So.
Yeah. This whole horror thing has been kind of crazy, I think, just how it has expanded and how it's grown. Why do you think that is? Why do you think people are responding so strongly to this?
I think people really like seeing, like, alt takes on these characters. You know, it started with Afterlife, the idea that there's a zombie apocalypse in Riverdale, and people thought, okay, this is kind of a weird one-off, but it's so great. There's so much depth to it, and it's not just a zombie story. Then following that up with Chilling Adventures, that's when it became more of a trend. And I feel like Jughead the Hunger was really the kicker. Like, oh, there's really more meat on this bone. Exactly. Yeah, but I think we're... It's almost like our own little superhero universe, but it's a horror universe. And, you know, somebody tweeted this to me recently, like, who would have thought 15, 20 years ago that Archie would be the premier, like, horror comic publisher? It's kind of exciting.
Yeah. Do you see the rest of them crossing over now that you've sort of broken that seal?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely on the table. It's something that we'd have to talk to with Roberto and kind of figure out, but... You know, Frank is carving out his own little corner with Vampironica and Jughead the Hunger first, so we'll see how that goes and take it from there.
How involved at this point is Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, given that he has two TV shows that he's running?
He is the busiest man in entertainment. So he's, like, tapped into the publishing stuff. He's tapped into, you know, the entertainment, just running those two shows. So, you know, he's aware of what's going on, which is good. And, yeah. You know, he's looped in with John Goldwater, who's out there, our CEO and publisher, and he's very immersed in everything, too.
Are we ever going to see him finish Chilling Adventures of Sabrina?
Yeah, I know. It's something he's super passionate about. Yeah. So it's just a matter of having the time and doing it right. You know, he doesn't want to rush it either.
Do you think at this point, I mean, I don't know how much you can talk about this, but... Given that it's now coming out after the TV show is going to come out, do you think that's going to influence the direction of the story? Are they similar? Are they going to veer off?
You know, it's all percolating in Roberto's head, which is kind of a plus. Like, he's doing the show and he's doing the comic, so I think whatever feeds into the show is going to feed into the comics, too.
Right. Is there any thought of having anybody else behind the scenes from Riverdale or Chilling Adventures? I know the Riverdale folks contribute to the Riverdale comic.
Right.
Say you have, like, a Britta London or somebody like that take over a book.
You know, we're connecting with them a lot for the Riverdale comics, so I think, you know, anything's open. Yeah.
Right. And the other big thing that you guys have coming up is Archie 700, which is a big relaunch. How much of a change is that for you?
You know, Mark Wade had such an amazing run with such, you know, like an all-star cast of artists like Fiona Staples, Pete Woods, Joe Eisma, Veronica Fish, and as his run was winding down, we realized that if you add up all the numbers, we get to 700. So it seemed like a natural breaking point. And I'd already been talking to Nick Spencer about doing some stuff, and he's a huge Archie fan. I think his dog is named Archie. So
is it a redhead?
I don't know. I haven't seen his dog. Maybe. I'll have to ask him for some photos today. But, you know, his aesthetic is he's taken over books from Mark before, so it's not like he's just going to relaunch and change everything. He's going to pick up some threads but also add his own twist to it. So it'll veer maybe a little darker, but it's not going to be a shocking reboot, you know. The characters are the characters you've been reading, but it's going to be a tonal shift that I think people will appreciate, especially if you're a fan of the show.
So you have all the monster stuff. You have the slightly more adult teen-ish Archie.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you have all the Archie Double Digest and all the classic Archie coming out at the same time. At this point, do you still see more fans coming in with the classic Archie stuff or the new Archie stuff, or is it just kind of a mix?
I think what you see that maybe didn't exist at Archie 10 or 15 years ago was that Archie's covering all the bases now, whereas, you know, when I came in as a fan, it was with classic Archie, and then you kind of outgrew it, and then now Archie's for everyone. You know, you can kind of pick it up at any point. So we've got a lot more gateways to other places.
Well, yeah, I'll say my daughter has a Sabrina trade, and she reads it just on repeat, on a loop.
That's the benefit of those classic books. It's like sitcoms. You can just rewatch them, and they're just funny. They're like gags.
Yeah, it's kind of hilarious, actually, just because she'll call me out on it. She'll be like, oh, this character did this thing with Sabrina, I'll be like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You know more than B Dab.
That's awesome.
Anything else people should be checking out?
No, we're about to head into our panel at 11, and we're really excited. And I think just make sure you set your TiVos or whatever else. TiVos is dating me now, but just, you know, like make sure you catch the
what
launch of
VHS.
Yeah, exactly. Pop open that Blu-ray, but you know, Sabrina's about to launch Riverdale season 3 and Archie 700. We've also got Archie 1941, which is the Archies during the time of World War II, and just, you know, Archie going off to war. We're in the midst of the Archie Batman crossover, which has been huge for us. So a lot of stuff going on.
Cool. Yeah. Alex, thank you so much.
Thanks,
have a
man.
Great
this
time.
Has been great. You too.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Alex. I'm here with Dennis Hopeless, who's one of our favorite authors on the show. I want to talk to you about this right off. I'm not a WWE fan at all. Like, it's not anything that I've ever gotten into. So we decided to try out the WWE books. I'm looking at them right now. We read the NX Takeover, and then WWE 21 is the one that I think just
the AJ Styles one?
Yeah, and they're great. They're so good. I think now I'm a wrestling fan is what's happened.
That's awesome. I'm a huge wrestling fan. You know, I watch WWE every week and got the job because I tweet about the pay-per-views.
So
editor, yeah, a couple years ago, the editor was just like searching Twitter for comic creators who care about wrestling. And
that's crazy.
Up.
That's how you can get jobs, basically.
Right. But in order to do an ongoing series, we really wanted to figure out a way to make a book that has a different kind of story in it than what they show on TV. Because on TV, it's mostly wrestling. They talk a little bit. They do behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah.
So what we came up with is, at the time I pitched Friday Night Lights, where the wrestling is the football game. So it's everything that happens between there. So it's a character story that takes these characters from the ring and fleshes them out into real people. And I don't know. It's kind of like an HBO show starring your favorite superstars. But, yeah, it's been interesting because people who don't watch wrestling can enjoy it, I think, because it's not just 20 pages of drawings of men wrestling. It's, you know, they're characters doing things. And
well, when you're tackling something like this with a real person, how much of it is fictionalized? How much do you have to sit down or get on the phone and talk to them about their background?
Well, it's easy because that question mark is built into wrestling. It's sort of like, how real is this? How much of this is the person? How much of it is the character? All of that has always been a big part of wrestling because, like, you know, what's real, what's fake, what's pre-planned. So I just kind of lean into that. I just watch the show and think of it as, okay, this is all of the information we have about who these characters are and what they do. Now, how do I flesh that out? Also, WWE owns most of the names and characters and whatever. So the the superstars who are playing that role, they're playing that role, and I get to take that and run with it.
It's a really interesting direction because it feels like it would be easy enough to say, okay, let's turn them into superheroes, give them superpowers, concentrate on the ring, build out these crazy storylines. But particularly, again, having read just the AJ Styles issue, it goes very much in the opposite direction and really dives down character-driven.
Right. Well, part of the reason we didn't go the direction you're suggesting is because they've done that in the past and no one was into it. Like, I think the wrestling fans thought it was exaggerated too much and it was kind of making a mockery of what they were into. So we definitely did. We wanted to keep the tone more similar to what they do on TV, but in a larger world. It seems to be well received. Like, everybody seems to be into it and we get good reviews and stuff. So I guess it worked, but it was I thought they were going to tell me no. Frankly, when I pitched that, I thought they were going to be like, no, we want something that's more action packed, more like a superhero comic. And I wanted to do a television drama.
Yeah. Have you gotten any feedback from the wrestlers themselves?
Not directly, but I met Xavier Woods at Dragon Con, and he was very kind and said that the comics are amazing. That's all he really said, but that's the closest I've come.
And then he suplexed you, right?
No, he was dressed like Scar from Lion King. He's a cosplayer.
Oh, my God.
He has these amazing costumes. So I only talked to him for a minute, but he was very kind.
Cool. What's coming up in the WWE book?
We have the AJ Styles arc just started. That's 5 issues, I guess. I think the Women's Evolution story we did with Bayley is about to come out in trade soon. We just finished up the month of NXT. So there should still be on the stands 4 NXT one-shots that take place over the course of the different eras of NXT. I think Boom also has an Undertaker OGN that I didn't do, but it looks amazing, that is either out now or coming
out. So don't pick that one up.
No, absolutely pick that one up.
Let's talk about your Marvel work. You have a bunch of stuff going on there. You have the Cloak & Dagger digital series, which is coming out in print as well. How much of that was meant to tie into the TV series?
Well, with Cloak and Dagger, it's a little weird because they changed a lot of the continuity for the television series. Mm-hmm. You know, they're teenagers still. They moved the location. They sort of flipped some things, which is great for the show. But we can't change who Tyrone and Tandy are in the 616. So it was sort of like, we're aiming this at the audience of the show. We want to get new readers, so make it new reader friendly. But you can't make them teenagers, and you can't change anything. So we kind of split the difference with the story has sort of an it, like Stephen King's It structure, where there's a thing that took place in the past when they were kids, when they first got their powers, that comes back, and they deal with it now as adults, so that I could kind of walk that line. So, we're definitely going after the audience of the TV show, but it doesn't tie directly. It's a 616 book. It takes place in-universe.
I've really been enjoying the series, but you definitely lead into, unless I'm misreading it, but definitely lead into them being romantic. And that's something that we did a podcast about the Cloak & Dagger TV show and debated pretty heavily, like, how much of our memory remembered Cloak & Dagger comics. Do you see them as a romantic relationship, as a friend relationship? How are they better?
Well, the theme of these six issues that we're doing is the breakup and of a codependent relationship and how difficult it is to try to figure out living apart. My language for that when I'm writing it makes more sense if they were in a relationship, but you can read it both ways because, you know, they need each other to survive. Literally, they can't spend too much time apart, or Tyrone's hunger gets so bad that he loses his mind. So in my mind, yes, they were straight up a couple the whole time, and they've broken up now, and they're both trying to figure out how to deal with it because they are so attached at the hip. But you could read it both ways. Yeah, I don't know. I think the whole story makes more sense if they're together, if they've always been together. But it is what it is. And on the page, readers take from it what they're going to, you know.
Let's talk about a super codependent relationship. You're working on Infinity Warps, Arachnite, which is literally jamming two characters together. We've seen a couple of different takes on these warped characters. Mm-hmm. What's your take on Arachnite?
Arachnite is basically a crazy Spider-Man. So we're combining Spider-Man and Moon Knight, and what we're taking away from Moon Knight is a multiple personality disorder. There's a much more one of the personalities is very violent and much more of a, I don't know, break the bad guy and let him pick up the pieces character. So we changed Peter Parker's origin story to be much more violent and devastating, so it broke his mind.
Then his uncle getting shot.
It is, there's a mauling. it's in the first issue, but it's a really ugly thing. So, yeah, we kind of just mashed together my favorite things about Moon Knight and my favorite things about Spider-Man and made a web-slinging, criminal-breaking amalgam of the two.
Yeah, with these sort of books, I think sometimes the temptation is just to kind of concentrate on like, ooh, look, this is different. How much were you being pulled in that direction versus actually drilling down on this new-ish character?
I avoided it as much as possible. In fact, I had to go back in and change the names of the side characters because I just used whichever one I wanted, and they wanted to combine them all. Uh-huh. So there's, Mary Jane shows up, and to me it's just Mary Jane, but I think we gave her a different name so that it's, they're all amalgamized. So the story makes sense. The universe makes sense. That, to me, that was the important thing, is like, flesh this character out, make it seem like a character that could have existed in the Marvel Universe forever, who is unique from Peter Parker and Moon Knight. I don't know. It is pieces of each one connected together, but it's very important to me that it would make sense by itself, you know?
Yeah.
So the multiple personality element of it was really fun to play with because it let me take different versions of Peter Parker and have them all make sense within inside the mind of one person.
Before I let you go, you have a creator-owned book that's coming up, right?
Yes.
What can you tease about that?
That it's amazing, and I'm co-writing it with one of my best friends and my favorite writer in comics, so it's going to be a really big deal. It's not announced yet. It should be announced within the next few months. It's going to be an Image book.
Cool. Last thing I'll ask you, I loved your Spider-Woman run. That
Thank
touched
you.
Me also like as a new father so deeply. Given that you're farther in your journey of having a kid, do you think you'd ever want to come back and do some sort of sequel to that?
I mean, I would have written that forever, literally. My favorite character in the Marvel Universe is Porcupine, who is a side character in that book, and my second favorite character is Jessica Drew. So, yeah, I would have written it forever, and it's weird when you do a long run like that. like, I'm sort of associated with Spider-Woman now, and people love that series. And as much as I would love to just pitch Jessica stuff all the time, I kind of think I told my story.
Okay.
Because I used her, and I did a short run on Doctor Strange, and I used her in that. And I love what we did with that, but I kind of wish I hadn't.
Yeah.
Because it just made me wish I was still writing Spider-Woman a lot of times. So, yeah, I think I'm more excited to see what people do with what we created there going forward than going back to it myself.
Cool.
All right, Dennis, thank you so much for taking the time.
All right, Pete LePage here. I am very excited. We're at the New York Comic Con Artist Alley, and I'm with one of my absolute favorites, Tim Seeley. It is a pleasure, sir. Welcome to the podcast.
I feel like we've been doing this for 80 years, Pete. Like, this is our reunion, but it's been a long time, but it just feels like we're just rolling right back into it.
Oh, my God. So much has happened since I've talked to you last. You're married now.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been doing so much stuff. Of course, I've been reading everything. I'm such a huge fan. What are you working on right now? What do you want to talk about?
Two things that we're going to now I'm doing Shatterstar Marvel, and I'm doing Injustice versus Masters of the Universe at DC. So I'm just basically writing about swords.
Nice.
That's what I do now. I'm just a sword writer. It's my favorite subject.
Congrats. Shatterstar seems like a perfect fit for you. It's kind of a fun character.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like I was the perfect age when he debuted, you know. I was 14 when that issue came out, and he like shows up and stabs himself in the same issue. So, yeah, I mean, so there's always been that sort of visceral attraction to something that, you know, debuted when you're a perfect age for it.
Yeah.
And when they asked me if I want to do it, I was like, I'm not sure. Oh, shit, I have an idea. Like, he's that character, so.
That's great. And what is your take on him? What are you trying to bring to the table?
I wanted to do, and maybe it was crazy to do it, but I wanted to do, like, a noir story with Shatterstar. Like, I wanted to do, like, a hard sort of a hard-boiled revenge story, you know. He's wronged, and he has to get back his, you know, get his friends back, have been kidnapped. He's basically, in our story, he's a landlord. He owns a building, and he helps out refugees who are lost in time, like him.
Oh, wow.
But they're all weird. There's, like, you know, a pug from the Spider-Ham dimension, but he's Flag Smasher, so he's Pug Smasher. It's just dumb stuff like that. But there's a bunch of them. And he's taking care of them, and then somebody from his past shows up, and they kidnap his tenants, and so now he's getting revenge. So it's sort of like like interdimensional John Wick, I guess.
Nice.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great elevator pitch right there.
Yeah, right.
Fantastic. Now, one of the first things I fell in love with that you started doing, Hackslash, now there's Hackslash Resurrection. Talk a little bit about what you're doing for that. I know that like you've kind of passed that on a little bit.
Well, I kind of felt like, you know, I met this woman, Teenie Howard. She had written a analysis of our Grayson run, and she just nailed it. She totally understood it. And so I asked her if she'd ever read Hackslash. She was like, "Oh, when I was 16, I was reading Hackslash and dressing like Cassie." And I thought, "Okay, you're perfect." So I thought it would be kind of interesting to like actually let a woman, like a goth punk rock bisexual woman, write it instead of my old white ass, you know?
Smart thinking.
So, yeah, so like I just kind of wanted to see what she would do with it. So I gave her 12 issues and teamed her up with this guy named C-Lore, and they made a pretty cool comic. I think it was like the intent was to sort of let them update it for 2018, I guess, you know? Yeah. And then I could come back in later and take credit and then do my own stuff with it, so.
I like the take credit part.
Yeah, of course. Well, I paid for it, so I'm the genius, you know?
No disagreement here. I'm glad you brought up Grayson. That was an unbelievable run. So fantastic. We talked about it a lot on our podcast. That was an amazing take. And for me, like, I've never been a Grayson fan, but this is the first time that I really liked it. What were you trying to bring to Grayson?
I mean, basically, we were apparently just trying to piss off everyone because when we first announced it, like, everybody hated us. But we were just trying to, like, okay, this Dick Grayson as a character is amazing. Mm-hmm. But I kind of, at the time, we felt like, you know, Nightwing as an identity had kind of been played, you know, as far as it could be taken. So DC said, we want to try a different genre with him. What do you think about Spy? And we just like, holy shit, that's amazing. And we came up with this idea of having him work for Spiral. So you got to keep him his own personality. You got to keep him an action guy. But it gave him more motivation. You know, he was doing something that other characters in the Bat family weren't doing. So I thought it gave us, you know, multiple angles and a lot of fuel for story, which is, I'm always looking for that anyway, so.
Fantastic. Now, we'll go back to the swords. You talked about, like, the perfect age. For me, I was the perfect age when He-Man came out.
Yeah.
That was just my jam as a kid, watching it all the time. What were you trying to bring to He-Man? What's it like being a part of such a big thing?
I mean, everybody knows me as he's that guy that likes He-Man. So, like, so I've kind of felt like sooner or later I had to work on it, actually. Yeah. I did the Art of Masked Universe book for Dark Horse with my brother, and I worked like in a consultation way on the She-Ra cartoon. And so when it was the opportunity to write He-Man DC, I was like, okay, I'll take it. And then they're like, and it's versus Injustice. Like, wait, what? but I mean, I kind of figured out like an angle on it. And, as a kid, I'd love the, He-Man versus Superman crossovers they would do.
Yeah.
So it was like, let's do a modern take on that. And, I just fed in all my affection for those little plastic guys and try to make it feel like, you know, all the things you liked about the stuff jammed together, but also make it about something, with them, you know, some relevance, you know. So it's because it's Injustice about a, you know, the system has failed and people have been taken over by the people who are supposed to protect them, which I feel like we can all relate to this particular year. So I try to make it about that and also lots of punching.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you still keep it real.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
Never take away the swords and punching. I would never do that.
Yeah. Well, one of the nice things about Resurrection is I was very excited that Cassie and Vlad would get back together.
Yeah.
I mean, that was something that, you know, they bugged me about. Like, I was like, do you think it's going to happen? And Alex would bust my balls like, it's called Resurrection. Yeah. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. We were so subtle.
Yeah.
We were just so subtle, yeah.
Was that something for the fans who kept asking about it just to be like, okay, fine, you know.
I mean, it was kind of.
Shut up, everybody. We'll bring Vlad back.
It was really just when I asked Teenie what she wanted to do, she was like, first off, I want to bring Vlad back.
Okay.
So, and I think, you know. She was right. There's something missing without him.
Yeah.
It doesn't work as well. I mean, I think we had a good time with Son of Sam Hain. We made it, you know, decent story with it. But, like, there's a chemistry that there is with those two. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of cruel to take it away. So, you know, I let her figure out how she wanted to tell that story and how she wanted to bring him back. And also, like, you know, what emotional angle it had. Like, what was the connection between the characters, how they feel about it and stuff. So I think it turned out pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. So as a veteran who's been doing cons for years and stuff like that, like, how do you keep it fresh for yourself? And how do you, like, what do you look forward to when it comes to conventions and stuff? Like, is it interacting with the fans? Is it being able to, like, make people happy? Like, hey, look what I did for you. Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, this has been true the entire time I've been doing this job, but, like, maybe after about 3 months of just being, you know, in the studio and grinding stuff out and trying to get scripts done and then only interacting on the internet and just feeling like everything's terrible and everyone hates you.
Right.
You go to a convention and you get to see the enthusiasm and you get to see, you know, the thing we all share. It's a huge refresher. I think if I didn't have conventions, I would have been out of comics a long time ago.
Oh, wow.
Because the hard parts of the job are very hard. But the good parts like this are very good. I mean, and it's coming to New York is a pain in the ass. New York is a pain in the ass. You know, trying to get around in this fucking convention is insane, but it's always worth it. It's always worth it.
Cool, man. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Please keep up the amazing work. Thank you so much for what you do. It's a pleasure to read all of it. So.
And I feel like we have to bring back your slasher at some point. Yeah, the Pete LePage killer.
Candle zombie. Yeah, please do. but, man, thank you for everything. And it's a pleasure to talk with you, man.
My pleasure. Good to see you guys again.